Well, we've been going through the book of Genesis together, just seeing the creation of human life in a beautiful world where we were designed to walk with God. What a wonderful picture it is to walk with God. We were designed to do that, but one day God turns up for his walk with his human beings, and Adam and Eve are hiding from God because of sin. We call the act of when they took the fruit, the fall. So if you hear about the fall, we're not talking about autumn, we're talking about Adam and Eve, the fall. And Romans 3.23 glimpses some of that. For all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. We're all a part of the fall. Human sin spread like a disease. We're all infected. The first children were born, they grew up. One brother killed another because he was jealous of his brother's walk with God. The disease looked like it was going to ruin everything, and God decided to bring a flood to wipe out everything again. In God's mercy, he allowed Noah and his family to survive, as well as every type of animal. It did not surprise God. God understood that this will not wipe out sin. 8 people and the animals survived, and so did sin in the hearts of the people. On the surface, you might think God was powerless to do anything about it. That's because we're up to Genesis 11. Genesis chapter 12 brings something new. Before we turn to that, we are thinking about faithfulness today. Faithfulness. Think of what that word means, be faithful, be trustworthy. I think about someone in your life who is you can rely upon. Someone trustworthy, reliable. I would like to think of some person who you know can be relied upon. I hope you have someone in your life like that you can rely upon them. I want you to think about how that person earned your trust. It's generally only one way, isn't it? They say they're going to do something, and they do it. Next time they say they're going to do something, they do it again. And they keep this pattern. They say they're going to do something, and they do it. Time and time again, they prove to be reliable, and trust is established. We all know people we can't trust. Do you trust someone? Can you really trust someone who 50% of the time do what they say? You can't put much trust in that sort of person. They're not very reliable. It's hard when you're in a relationship with someone who is proven not to be reliable and they demand, trust me, I will do it. You think, well, how can I trust you? How can I trust you when you've not done in the past? They demand trust, but they give no reason to trust. When we first meet a person brand new, like someone we've never met before, we allow them a measure of trust and we wait and see what they're going to do with it, don't we? And sadly, we have people in our lives, maybe in our family or friends, who we trust less than a perfect stranger. In chapter 11, Abram is mentioned for the first time. Now, let me just make sure everyone knows Abram is the name of Abraham before God changed it. So when Abram and Abraham, Sarai and Sarah, they're the same people, God changes their names. Abram's father's Terah, and he was originally from the area south of Babylon. They moved to a place called Ur, where they settled. And that's where we're going to start reading. Genesis chapter 12, verse 1. The Lord said to Abram, leave your country, your people, and your father's household, and go to land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. So Abraham left, as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abraham was 75 years old when he set out for Haran. He took his wife Sarai, his nephew Lot, and all the possessions they accumulated, and the people they had acquired in Haran. And they set out for the land of Canaan. And they arrived there. I'm going to stop there, because we need to think about this, these five short verses. We need to understand what this means. God told him to leave his country, his people, and his father's family. He's to leave his whole life behind. And some of you people here have done that. You've come to Australia. You've left your homeland, your family, all behind. So you have a better understanding than me, who lives 2 hours from my place where I was born. You have a far better understanding what this means for God to say to Abram, do this. But here, God said to Abram, I'm going to give you a land that I will show you. Like, he sets off and he doesn't even really know where he's going. Later in chapter 24, we see that Abram had a lot of people in his group. He had, it says, 318 fighting men born in the household. This is he's got a lot of servants, employees, he's got a lot of people travelling with him. A large household. And God says, I want you to take that, I'm going to show you where to go and live. We also need to remember that Abram's family worshipped many gods. Joshua 24 says that. They probably worshipped the sun and the moon and the stars and the rivers and the ocean and the land. They had idols, they had sacred objects. How can Abraham know this one voice, this God who has revealed himself to Abraham, how can he know he can trust this God who has revealed himself? They had every reason to doubt Abram when he says, God spoke to me. What God? Which God? They had mad people in those days too, didn't you? You know, like that hear God's voices, just like we have today. And they must have thought, Abram, like, are you sure? They start off, they leave their country, their people, their household, which is a huge act of faith. They leave the security behind them. Imagine this huge group of people with their animals. Now let's imagine they're in Canberra when they set off. And they're walking. How long would it take to get to Sydney, do you think? Oh, I don't know. Walking, yeah, with all their families and the goats and the herds. And, boy, I wouldn't like to do it. And human beings aren't that different. I mean, they'll be going, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? But they didn't travel just from Canberra to Sydney. They would have went up to Newcastle and to Maitland, to Scone, Tamworth, Armidale. They would have travelled the equivalent from Canberra to Brisbane on foot, camping along the way, no motorways. Okay, they're walking with kids, people are dying on the way, people are being born on the way, animals are dying and being born on the way. Life goes on. So look again at verse 5. He took his wife Sarai, his nephew Lot, all the possessions they accumulated, and the people they had acquired in Haran, and they set out for the land of Canaan, and they arrived there. And they arrived there represents 1,200 kilometres. But look at verse 2 and 3. For why, I think this is why he did it. I will make you into a great nation and I will bless you. I will make your name great and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you and whoever curses you I will curse. And all the peoples of the earth will be blessed through you. We summarise these in the 3 points. You'll be a great nation, you will have a land, and your blessing will go into the whole world. Into the whole world, you will be blessed. Your blessing will go into the whole world. And when God was talking about being a great nation, he was talking about descendants, not just servants. He was talking about descendants. You see, Abraham and Sarah were childless. And five times God says, I will make, or I will bless, or I will curse. God is asking nothing of Abram. He doesn't say, I will do this if you do that. These are big statements that God is making here. And Abram must have asked the question about whether he can trust this God that has spoken with him. Can God deliver on what he has said he will do? Is he stronger than the other gods we'll find in other lands? Because at that time, Abraham probably assumed that there was other gods around. I have no idea how Abraham received this message, but his faith is seen in the fact that he gets up and goes. That shows his faith in God. This is a relationship. God is going to do something to fix the problem of sin and the disease that it seems to be. But one thing, it's a disease that we can do nothing about. It's only what God can do. It's good to remember that when Genesis was brought together, it was probably Moses and the people of Israel, they were about to go into the promised land. And this is when they're looking at this very account of Abraham. And you see, in Abraham's life, he had a couple of children by the end of his life. It wasn't a great nation, but Israel was the great nation. They were the fulfillment of that promise hundreds of years ago. And they were going into this promised land promised by God to Abraham. You see, they were the fulfillment of these promises. They could trust God. Israel knew they could trust God because of what he had done in the past. But Abraham, we don't know what history he had with God. But it's the history where we learn about trusting one another. But for me, that's the amazing thing. How did Abraham know he could trust God? He had no history, no sacred writings. The Israelites have had hundreds of years to trust God. You and I have had thousands of years collectively because we've got the writings. We've got people of faith, we've got the accounts of people of faith throughout every generation who testify that God is trustworthy, he is faithful. If you don't believe it, there are people here I can point you to that can show you how God has been faithful in their life right through their whole life. No matter what's happened, God has been faithful. But how did Abraham trust God? I don't know. That's maybe why he got the name of the father of faith. But one thing, there's times when Abraham needed to be reassured, and we're going to read one of those accounts where he needed to be reassured. Genesis 15. After this, what happened before was some kings came and took his cousin, his nephew Lot away, and he recovered him. But after this, the word of the Lord came to Abraham in a vision. Do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield, your very great reward. But look at Abraham's. But Abraham said, and this is the man of faith, O sovereign Lord, what can you give me since I remain childless and the one who will inherit my estate is Eleazar of Damascus, a servant. And Abraham said, you have given me no children, so a servant in my household will be my heir. Then the word of the Lord came to him, this man will not be your heir, but a son coming from your own body will be your heir. He took him outside and said, look up at the heavens and count the stars, if indeed you can count them. And he said to him, so shall your offspring be. These words, Abraham believed the Lord, and God credited to him, to Abraham, as righteousness. He also said to him, I am the Lord who brought you out of Ur of the Chaldeans to give you this land to take possession of it. But Abraham said, oh, sovereign Lord, how can I know that I will gain possession of it? So the Lord said to him, bring me a heifer, a goat, and a ram, each 3 years old, along with a dove and a young pigeon. Abraham brought all these things to him and cut it in half and arranged the halves opposite to each other. The birds however did not cut in half. And the birds of prey came down on the carcasses, but Abraham drove them away. As the sun was setting, Abraham fell into a deep sleep, and a thick and dreadful darkness came over him. Then the Lord said to him, "Know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in their own, in a country not their own, and they'll be enslaved and mistreated for 400 years. But I will punish this nation that serves, they serve as slaves, and after they'll come out with great possessions. You, however, will go to your fathers in peace and be buried at a good old age. In the fourth generation, your descendants will come back here, for the sins of the Amorites not yet reached its full measure. And when the sun has set, when the sun had set and darkness had fallen, a smoking pot with a blazing torch appeared and passed between the pieces. On that day, the Lord made a covenant with Abraham and said, 'To your descendants I'll give this land, from the rivers of the Egypt to the great river of the Euphrates, the land of the Canaanites, the Kenizzites, the Kadmonites, the Hittites, Perizzites, Rephaites, Amorites, Canaanites, Girgashites, and Jebusites.'" We see here Abraham in distress. His desire for a son is overpowering. Perhaps it's one of the reasons why he was prepared to take such a risk and follow this God, because he promised a son. Perhaps he was ready to risk everything for the promised son. God does the most wonderful thing for him. God makes a solemn agreement, a covenant with Abraham, that he will have a son and his descendants will receive this land. If you and I make a covenant with one another, perhaps you want to buy my house, your solicitor will talk to my solicitor and they'll make some arrangements, won't they? And then one day you and I will get down and we will sign a document that's a binding agreement. Or if you go to court as a witness, you swear on the Bible and you make an oath, you know that if you lie, you could go to jail. Well, here, in this ancient world, thousands and thousands of years ago, the way they do a solemn agreement was that take an animal, cut it in half, lay it apart, and the two parties would walk through these animals, because you would know, if you break the agreement, this will happen to you. Okay, that's pretty solemn, isn't it? So that's a solemn agreement. But the amazing thing here is, Abraham does not walk between the halves with God. God alone, in representing this pot, the smoking pot, walks through the two halves. God makes a binding promise, powerful for the day, about trying to tell Abraham that he can trust what he said. What about verse 6? Which on the screen, Abraham believed the Lord and he credited to him as righteousness. Abraham believed God. God sees that belief and says, we can be in a right relationship. Righteousness means to be in a right relationship with God. Righteousness means we believe God. For only then can we walk with God. Even on human terms, how can you have a relationship, a true relationship with someone you can't trust, who doesn't believe each other? Abraham was very old. Sarah was very old. He had every reason not to believe God. He ignored those doubts and he believed God, and God said, "That is righteous." And that's why today, to be righteous means that we trust God. We're going to trust God when he says, "Jesus Christ, the one I sacrificed for you, is now exalted and he is Lord. You follow Jesus." That is righteousness. And that's what we can trust. The problem is often that people don't believe it. I don't believe Jesus. I don't believe the sacrifice. I don't believe the There's power enough in that to save my sins, to forgive my sins. I don't believe it. But either way, when we don't believe God, you know what we're doing? You know what we're doing, don't you? We're saying, "God, you're not powerful enough to do it. We're not in the right relationship with him." Now, Abraham was known as the man of faith, but please don't think he always acted that way. The Bible tells us that he, at least two occasions, God said, I'm going to give this land, and we find him outside the land. And when he's outside the land, he passes his wife and his sister so people don't attack him and just grab his wife. And so there's his wife, who God said you're going to have a child with her, in a harem waiting to be a wife to someone else. This is not the behaviour of a huge man of faith, is it? But it is amazing that we see it. So let's see. Remember, God said, I will bless, I will make, I will bless, I will curse. We're going to look at read another passage and see who's going to do the doing. Genesis 16, verse 1. Now Sarai, Abraham's wife, had borne him no children. But she had an Egyptian maidservant named Hagar. So she said to Abraham, the Lord has kept me from having children. Go sleep with my maidservant. Perhaps I can build a family through her. Abraham agreed to what Sarah said. So after Abraham had been living in Canaan for 10 years, Sarah, his wife, took her Egyptian maidservant Hagar and gave her to her husband to be his wife. You know what she said? Perhaps I can build a family. Who was going to do the building? Sarah was going to think she. Who said he would build the family? God. She's going to do what God can't do. She's going to do what God can't do. It's interesting that she. Let me use these words. She said to her husband, he listened to his wife, she took and she gave to her husband. She said to her husband, he listened to his wife, she took and she gave to her husband. Who's done that before? Eve. Sounds a bit that way, doesn't it? It reminds us of, it's almost reenacting Adam and Eve in the garden. The greatest opposition to faith in God is the idea that I can do it myself. The thought that I can make myself good enough for God goes completely against faith. Somehow I'm going to be good enough for God to accept me goes against faith. Our faith comes in remembering what Jesus has already done, and that's why we do this every week, because you know what? This place is only a place for sinners. This is where sinners come. Because we need to be reminded that we've been given forgiveness through Jesus. It's not because of somehow I've lived a good life during the week or I try to live a good life. This is a place for broken people. Our faith comes in remembering what Jesus has done. We live in the truth means that we don't try to make ourselves good enough for God. Our faith, of course, does lead us to action. Now, I am to love others because God first loved me. I am to forgive others because God first forgave me. I am to show mercy to others because God has shown me mercy. I am to accept others because God has accepted me. That is how we live out our faith in God. God is going to fix the big problem of sin. He is going to do this through Adam's descendants. The promise was that one of his children, we remember who the child is, don't we? Jesus will bring a blessing to the world. I think we're far better off than Abraham was when it comes to trusting God, reasons to trust God, that is. God has shown us that he has been faithful since the start of the world. So when you find yourself questioning God's faithfulness, let me suggest three things. Abraham did not see the fulfillment of his promise in his lifetime. By the end of the life, as I said, he had a few kids. He had a plot of land that he bought as a burial place for his wife. That was it. But God is not limited by death, is he? And so there's Danella over in New Zealand. She's been living there the last couple of years. She died, which is a great sadness to us because the thought that she's no longer here. But God doesn't, not limited by death, is he? She's receiving now what the fulfillment of the promise. And we won't see the fulfillment of the promise in this life. Even this morning I heard a radio announcement just announcing that, you know, God made us perfect and you can be perfect today. They're wrong. They're wrong. We cannot be free of illness. We cannot be perfect today. There will be a day where we will be, but it won't be in this lifetime. The second thing is Abraham knew what the promises were and what they were not. You know, sometimes we have this idea that God promises wealth or health or happiness. God has not promised these things. He's promised our good. And sometimes it doesn't include us being wealthy or healthy or even happy. We can be joyful in God, but we can't demand of God the things that he's never promised. And sometimes people are turned away from faith because they say, God didn't do this for me. Well, God never promised he would do that to you. Third thing, you can't do what only God can do. Don't try to work out your own holiness. Don't try to work out your own salvation. Don't demand that of others, because you know what? We only build rules. There's rules and legalism in that way. God is our Saviour. He can bring purpose. He's bringing about his purpose in us. We are to work with God. We're to cooperate with God, but let God be God. God is faithful to his promises, always, all the time. If you find yourself doubting God's faithfulness, realise that maybe, firstly, it's not God's timing. Secondly, you may be making demands of God that he didn't promise. And thirdly, he will bring about his purposes in and through you and through others. Let's just pray.